panoply, panorama, panpipe, pansy, aha, pansexual, knowing no boundaries of sex or gender. Sound interesting? Then join Sally on Sundays at noon for Out of the Pan. All those gender questions making you think too hard? Whether it's transgender, bisexual, polyamorous or beyond, we'll throw those questions into the pan and cook up the answers for you. So go on, push that gender envelope, only on 3CR 855am digital and 3cr.org.au.
Let's 3CR 855am digital, 3cr.org.au and on demand. Thanks to tuning in to an international, we'll start that again, an international Women's Day special for Out of the Pan on 3CR. I'm Sally Goldner, and Out of the Pan is a show that covers pansexual issues, knowing no boundaries of sex or gender, which very much includes issues faced by all diverse women, as best as I and perhaps other guests can speak to those issues. Sorry. If you want to get in touch with the show and I can get to feedback in a future Out of the Pan, you can do so. outofthepan855@gmail.com. Text 61401078981. Tweet at Sal Gold said so, and well, a touch of masculinity, and that's the bottom line. And also leave messages for me, perhaps on my personal page on Facebook. So great to be here. Haven't done an IWD show in a couple of years, so good to be back doing it. And today's theme for International Women's Day is Awesome Trans Women, which covers every trans woman ever, past, present and future. Someone said to me a couple of years ago, given what trans people, and that includes, of course, trans men and non-binary, go through, they said, it's amazing there's any trans people living at all. And so I want to dedicate this show right off the top to every trans woman, past, present and future, but really to the whole trans and gender diverse community. And that's why I picked this theme of trans awesomeness. I also want to say I totally, hugely, 150 trillion% acknowledge the negativities that we face, but I think it's important on the flip side of things, in my best balanced Libran voice, to look at the positives. Look at the awesome trans people, the people whose creativity and genius make the world a better place despite all the odds that trans people go through. So really, really, really want to talk about that. The other thing I do want to say is I haven't sort of had a judging panel or anything put together to do this. I'm just trying to do a diverse sample. It's not like the people I'm going to talk about are maybe, say, the top 5 or top 10 awesome trans women. I want to talk about a lot of people and point out the awesomeness of trans women in the face of huge adversity. Well, let's dive in then. And, well, there's one trans woman who has for a long time been one of my sort of international heroes, and that's Lynn Ann Conway, born January 2, 1938, coming up for 80, an amazing person, 80 next year, 79 and holding as a song almost went, an American computer scientist, electrical engineer, inventor and trans activist, according to Wikipedia. That's their words, I don't know if they're Lynn's. Born in 1938, she built a telescope one summer, which I had forgotten about that bit. She tried to transition as early as 1957-8, remembering that one of the first more publicised transitions of the modern era was Christine Jorgensen, reported on 1st of December 1952 in the New York Times. I suppose you could say she's a bit of a hero for giving some visibility, just for that alone. But she then finally got some varying degrees in the early 1960s. She was recruited by IBM and joined the architecture team. Was Seth Rollins' parents there? No, that's a WWE reference. In designing an advanced supercomputer along with others, And the ACS project appears to have been the first superscalar design. Now, I just hope my laptop turns on, so don't ask me to explain that. Any IT geeks out there, please let me know. But she then realized she could transition, and she unfortunately was terminated by IBM, which is pretty damn sad after doing some amazing work and having that genius. So she then eventually did transition and heard about pioneering researcher Harry Benjamin. And sadly, she was also married and denied access to her children. And in the legal context of the time, she was denied access, because she transitioned. And IBM fired, as I said, Lynn in 1968. She then took a new name and identity and restarted her career, as we say in the trans community, in stealth, not talking about her trans past, which I think it always has to be, affirmed that anyone's in stealth, particularly in earlier times, I suppose, when look at what just happened. You do a brilliant job and you get fired. I mean, to use a parallel to gay males, think of Alan Turing and what he went through, cracking the German code in World War II and then, being put on drugs. And she started at another company, Computer Applications Limited, and then Memorex, and then Xerox. And obviously her genius was very quickly noted. And again, don't ask me about computers. She co-authored Introduction to VLSI Systems, a groundbreaking work that would soon become a standard textbook in chip design. Now, we know lots of queers are geeks, but this is capital city of geek country as far as I can tell. So she did lead an absolute revolution. And her computing achievements, they're almost too much to read out. She went to work for the Defense Department, and a colleague in the 80s said Lynn would like to live five lives in the course of one life, and she's charismatic and energetic. She figures out a way so everybody wins. See, there's some great leadership skills that trans brains that go beyond the limits of gender can come up with. She then joined the University of Michigan in the mid-80s, there was also a career memoir in 2012. So very, very awesome. And then what happened on the trans front was in the late 90s, a reporter going back looking at some declassified documents on the IBM breakthroughs in the late 60s, was trying to piece together the picture and obviously talk to people, get the inside goss, so to speak, and one day gets a call from Lynn Conway. But of course, Lynn was at IBM under whatever the male name was, and no one knows, and of course we don't care because we don't dead name people. And the reporter's going, hang on, how come you know so much about this? Mark Smotherman was the reporter. And so she began to come out of stealth in 1999. And then there were profiles in around 2000 and 2001. And she's just, I think, to me personally, I suppose maybe it's, closer to my era. I mean, not quite as close. She's born 1938. I'm a middle-aged pan chookie born in 1965. But I think Lynn's story says so much about, how much people have to go through. Even if you do a great job, there's the old saying, of course, that, when you face, you have to deal with barriers, you have to be, you can't just be equal, you have to be better than the people who put down the barriers in the first place. Well, Lynn seems pretty better to me, yet still went through all that stuff and still came out the end. So she survived, and she's revered, I think, as I say, both seriously, and I will say IT circles, but also you could say in trans circles as well. I personally find her amazing. I've had the honour of chatting to her many years ago. She's just a lovely, lovely person, I think very at peace, and I think she has managed to get some reconnection with her children, which is pretty awesome. And that's something that trans people do miss out on. I've got to give a mention to one of my dear friends, Lynette McDonald, the co-founder of Trans Family, who finally reconnected with her grandson, her trans daughter's son, last year, and there were, I think, four or five generations of the family all together for the first time. And so, you know, people like, well, Lynn must be something about that, whether it's a cis or trans woman, Lynn being the mother of a trans woman, not the trans woman themselves, but Lynn Conway, absolute pioneer. And it just shows the amazing genius of trans people and, like Alan Turing, gay. And, well, we make jokes about the amount of IT geekery in the queer community. I think that's probably the tip of the iceberg. And great to see it recognised. So there's an awesome trans woman to get us underway on this International Women's Day special. An awesome trans woman who's a musician is Jade Starr, and who I believe has some new music coming out soon. This one goes all the way back to 2002. Jade, has to put out a few albums, but so many trans people face what Jade's about to sing about, a conundrum. 3CR, 855 AM digital, 3cr.org.au, out of the Pan International Women's Day special with Sally. Mm-hmm. 3CR supporters indeed, 3CR, 855 AM digital, 3cr.org.au, and on demand on International Women's Day. And also, of course, the union movement proudly and increasingly and broadeningly supporting the rainbow communities as well. Trades Hall, lots of great events. I wish I could get to them all half the time. But, sometimes time does not permit. Well, we started, I suppose, with someone born in 1938, being Lynn Conway, on this special of International Women's Day. And I thought, well, let's jump around all over the place because we can. It's what we do. And talk about going to the other end of the spectrum. One of the things that I've got to say personally is of just great joy to me is to see trans people beginning to come out younger and younger. I know it's not an objective research-based measure, but I always say about 10 years ago, I think I knew about three out trans people under 25, give or take. And, they'd come along to rainbow support groups, get a bit of support, but still very isolating. Yes, there's some parallels between what people whose sexual orientation is other than heterosexual face, but it's not gender identity. And so to see now the amount of young people emerging and with the support of families is just mega, mega awesome. And, I've got to say my highlight of this, both Carnival and Pride March this year, the number of young trans people and young queer people overall with the support of families is just cathartic and, as I say, heartwarming. And just one of those people in the youth bracket, or who I'm defining roughly as under 30, is, of course, Georgie Stone. And, Georgie's story sort of blows me away on so many levels. Georgie, when she was 10 years and 9 months old, became the youngest person to be granted permission by a court to start puberty delaying processes. It's now been revealed that Georgie fought to get rid of stage one blockers out of the courts, and that's a welcome move for what that. Just to give the background on that, I think that's really important. If you get to puberty and that's where your distress of trans comes up, because your sense of inner self is going one way, your body's going another, and I'm not saying that in a binary sense, it's really difficult, and I do remember my own. And all of a sudden you need blockers. If you've then got to get a delay to the family court or perhaps pay more to get your case, pushed up the list, I'm not a lawyer, really difficult. By getting rid of that process, it saved a lot of time, a lot of cost. It's not irreversible, so it doesn't need to be before the court legally, that much I do know. And so a fantastic win. And it just seemed last year, in what was, of course, at times a very grim year for trans and gender diverse people and families and rainbow people overall, Georgie was this absolute shining beacon, light at the end of the tunnel. And so many things happened throughout the second half of the year. The fantastic story about a girl put on by Four Corners and Janine Cohn, who did a story about trans young people back at the end of 2014 for Four Corners called Being Me, and, you know, just absolutely, in talking allies, I mean, there's a media ally, if ever there was one, Anya Janine, and that 2014 story, which particularly featured a young person in regional Victoria and their school principal, was actually Four Corners, according to all reports, highest rating show of the year, even more than, say, political scandals or investigations, which I think is pretty heartwarming. And so, yeah, Georgie and family, the fabulous family that she has, were on Australian Story in August 2016. As I say, in the middle of what was a grim year, all of a sudden, gosh, it's like that Warner Brothers cartoon, all of a sudden came a ray of hope. Well, we had it in Georgie Stone. And I think a highlight for me last year was the next morning on social media where someone said, wow, something to the effect of, wow, she's 16, as she was then, poised, intelligent, articulate, she could be a leader in anything. So, yeah, saviour of the world, not just trans and gender diverse people. But I think what this says is when you can get trans and gender diverse people off to a flying start, they can achieve things. I mean, look at the contrast between, say, Georgie and Lynn. Lynn having her career interrupted to transition and being fired, and Georgie with the support of family and having to counter some degree of bullying at school, which was mentioned in that Australian story, can get through relatively, you know, without as, you know, with much less baggage, I think it's fair to say. And every time I meet Georgie, I'm just blown away. I've heard her speak firsthand on many occasions, and, you know, so many awards last year, of course, LGBTI Victorian of the Year, much deserved, very raccoon-eyed person sitting talking at the moment who is at the Globe Awards. You can, of course, get About a Girl, I'm pretty sure it's, and Being Me, I've been YouTubed as well as on the ABC website. And, of course, she's gone on and won other awards as well, other Human Rights Awards. She's just a total and utter legend, and of course a tick to her family, who are just such great allies. So it really is exciting to see these sorts of developments happen. And I know, you know, we felt really, you know, bruised last year by things like Safe Schools, plebiscite, and in the Victorian context, the sad, well, temporary defeat, that's how I'm going to see it, of birth certificate reforms. And also, I think the way those reforms were attacked was pretty abysmal. But got to hand it to Georgie. You know, when that comment came up on social media, I thought, this is the vision we've been wanting, that trans people will be able to just get on with their lives, use all their potential. Of course, in the words of, to quote a male hero, sorry, on International Women's Day, to quote Batman, for good and not evil purposes, Robin. And, you know, Georgie gives a huge sense of hope that she has, you know, emerged so quickly. And, you know, it's a source of joy even just to meet her. It was only her first Pride March in 2017, which I was a bit surprised about. And I'm sure that she and so many others, parents and young trans people, had a good time. So really, really welcome to see. So, yep, contrasts of generations, but certainly awesome trans women to talk about on International Women's Day. Very, very welcome. All right. Well, we've talked about advocacy talent. We've talked about IT. We've had the musical talent of Jade Starr. Well, someone else whose music is great, I haven't played this one in a while. I thought, I know, trans women on International Women's Day, the fabulous Ashley, who I will call Ashley Grumble because I just love that nickname, and it kind of works. Here's Ashley's fantastic acoustic guitar-based track, Sixth Sense. And definitely Ashley is an awesome trans woman with a sixth sense for music. 3CR, 855 AM digital, 3cr.org.au and on demand, out of the Pan International Women's Day special with Sally. Thanks for tuning in to the Out of the Pan International Women's Day special with Sally. And, well, do you feel all relaxed after that? I feel like I've just gone through a session of hypnotherapy or something. But that's the great musical skill that can calm you down of the fabulous Ashley, Ashley Apple Crumble, as I was I always love those sorts of names. A fantastic trans musician. There's lots of them, of course, and trans performers. Jordan Raskopoulos, of the Axis of Awesome, probably one of the more well-known trans artists in Australia. Others around the world, Laura Jane Grace, the punk rock singer, many others as well, all contributing their amazing art. But it was great to see, as part of Midsummer, a great range of trans and gender diverse people in many of the art exhibitions, including the one in relation to disability that the City of Brimbank hosted. Great to see trans women in the Beautiful Women exhibition in relation to breast cancer, in a way, so all contributing as part of the diversity of women on in their way. Well, it's very hard sometimes to be objective about who you like and who you don't like, but I'm going to give a little sort of woohoo to one of my favourite trans women, and that's Julie Peters, a pioneer in Victorian trans advocacy here in Australia, and was doing it in the 80s when we only just had those things. Remember fax machines? I think they were a sort of, I don't know, an early form of email, perhaps they're in a museum, but and then when Julie was way ahead of the crowd on internet and started emailing and stuff, and of course it's so easy nowadays to arrange things and get petitions rolling and all the rest. I forgot to mention, of course, one of Georgie Stone's great achievements is organising the petition to get stage two of the trans young people's hormones out of the family court. A little harder, I believe it will need a change to a piece of legislation, which of course has got to go through Parliament, but there is at least broad in principle support, and it could have happened last year if it wasn't for that damn democracy thing called an election. There is support from across Parliament, Liberal, Labor, Greens, Independents such as Andrew Wilkie, Cathy McGowan, many others, and I haven't found out about the Xenophon team, but of course even with all of those, it would be enough. Coming back to Julie Peters, of course, started, of course, legendary because for the TV trivia buffs, Julie in her, we'll say, main career in terms of television production, did so much work with Countdown in the 70s and 80s in terms of lighting. And then, of course, after transition, got involved in politics with the Australian Democrats. And Julie's told the story many times of how she was a bit worried that it was going to be a problem, that she was trans. The Democrats didn't care, of course. People like gay man Chris Carter, the late Don Chip, of course, very, people-minded sort of people. Was it keep the bastards honest, all that sort of thing. And it actually turned out, though, to be an advantage once, in the 90s where trans people was trans was still own, well, it's, of course, it's always been around, but there hadn't been a lot of discussion of it. For someone like Julie to rock along and be out there in politics, even though she didn't ever get elected anywhere, not through lack of trying, was pretty damn awesome. And, the thing that I like about Julie, which again showing some trans awesomeness, her diverse, warped sense of humour, I think always made me chuckle. Julie talks about the time she was interviewed by a certain 3RW morning presenter. I'm not mentioning Neil Mitchell's name, but it's public knowledge. And, Neil, for some reason, whatever you might say, talk about his style, for some reason he was flustered and said, "So your lighting experience, was that in television or radio?" So it's not often someone gets the better of Neil, and the only other queer and allied person I know to do it really well was the fabulous Nan McGregor of PFLAG, who put him in his place. So on you, Julie, you're up there. But of course, a favourite incident of mine, which, gosh, I wish we had cameras in phones back in the late 90s. I think they were just sort of probably had a big flashbulb or something at the time, was at a 1998 Meet the Candidates meeting, and Julie was representing the Democrats. And believe it or not, One Nation came along, this older, presumer, I would say most likely cisgender male, and Julie got up to tell her story, and she talks about it, and she just said, "Well, so when I was an altar boy in the Catholic Church, and this One Nation dude's face, I wish I had a camera." Her sense of humour, her humility is incredible. You know, a great role model. And I've got to say, personally, for me, Julie Peters and another person who has managed to retire from advocacy, Caitlin White, I don't think I would be anywhere near where I would be without them, to be very personal. But they did provide a sense of groundedness and vision to the trans community, you know, did some of the many of the hard yards, built alliances very early on. And as I say, where there wasn't the speed of electronic communication that made it so much easier, particularly for trans type of communities who can be very isolated. So really, really important to acknowledge a local pioneering advocate like Julie. I do, of course, acknowledge Caitlin, but being quiet in our days, I won't you know, sort of talk too much without her permission. Yeah, her sense of humour, she recently did a huge thesis on some trans issues. Anyone who does a doctorate or a master's or a thesis gets a tick in my book for doing it. I don't care what the topic is. It's such a huge thing to do. So a big woohoo for Julie. She really, in my opinion, is a great hero for our community in Victoria. And I think, you know, really sort of started building a bit of a legacy that we could build on, and, you know, helped make Melbourne and then later Victoria, I think, one of the, you know, we're not perfect. We all know of all the things we've got to do, but people like Julie, their awesomeness, their sense of humour, their many, many skills, you know, sort of give a sense of foundation and vision for our community, as she did in when she was, you know, so prominent and now, you know, laying back doing her stuff in her way, as she has every right to. So good on you to Julie Peters, another awesome trans woman to talk about on International Women's Day. All right. Well, trans people of all sorts are increasingly parents and have a sense of compassion and nurturing. And while not a trans person, again, I always say to the best of my knowledge, but she's, of course, a wonderful singer, and that's Anne Kirkpatrick. So all the trans people who are parents, or to people, you know, whose parents are supportive of them being trans, I think I'm going to dedicate this song to all of you on International Women's Day, and Kirkpatrick and many mothers, from an album going way back now, interestingly called Cry Like a Man, which was released in 1997, I think it is. So, yeah, a bit of 90s for you, in line with Julie. 3CR, 855 AM, digital, 3cr.org.au, and on demand, out of the Pan International Women's Day special with Sally. Lots going on this International Women's Day in 2017, and, you know, lots to keep working for, including for all sorts of diverse women. Had the honour a couple of weeks ago of being part of a roundtable hosted by the UN Special Rapporteur regarding violence against women. A difficult issue to talk about, of course, but got to. Of course, has to be, and great to see so many diverse people there. Yours truly representing Transgender Victoria and Bisexual Alliance. I think there is a huge, you know, if people don't get the details, there's this, hey, well, okay, you might be a woman experiencing a disability, and you might be of a multicultural or multi-faith background or Indigenous, and you might be queer, but hey, there's all, it's sort of, a lot of it is so much the same, the diminishing of the issues. Well, an awesome trans woman in Australian history, to wrap up the show, is the fabulous Carlotta Carol Spencer. And I think it's important to note that, because when you look at, for someone born in 1943 and in Balmain, well, as she was then, I suppose, if you're assigned male at birth, you're a Balmain boy, a bit like Paul Keating. You can take Balmain out of the boy, or something like that. No, whatever it was. Anyway, I think it's important to mention Carlotta because, again, someone who gave visibility at a time when there was just virtually zero for trans people. And, you know, I always, some people will say, well, hang on, she ended up doing drag type of stuff. As someone, a trans woman I've interviewed many years ago, said, you know, in the 70s, say, and 80s, you had two choices for work as a trans woman, pretty much, and that was the parlours or the drag shows. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with either. It's about being forced into it when you don't want to that, of course, is a problem. If your skills and aptitudes lie elsewhere, what a waste, what a degree of stress that can create. As someone who, in terms of my work, was doing something that wasn't really me for a long time, I can tell you it's not pleasant. But Carlotta did it and did it well, and of course then went on to be on Beauty and the Beast, where her wit and eloquence, you know, did such a great job. And now, of course, is quietly living life on the Gold Coast. But I think certainly in terms of visibility deserves a great mention. Of course, she was also in the soap opera Number 96, the new girlfriend of Arnold Feather, and played herself. Now, we talk a lot about today about trans people playing trans roles, and she played a role of being a trans showgirl. And unfortunately, the character then left the show, and she was credited as Carol Lee. And of course, yeah, she then went on to Beauty and the Beast, and she's now on a show called was on the show that existed called Studio 10, which I think I don't watch a lot of daytime television or much TV at all, but I think it's had the proverbial axe. And of course, the Carlotta sort of biopic, as it's called, the telly movie based on her life, where she acted as a consultant. I thought that was pretty cool. A lot of people at the time found it very, very moving. The show that aired in June 2014 was the number 10 show of the night and got 800,000 viewers, which is no mean feat, as far as I'm aware, on free-to-air television. And I think a lot of people at the time, I remember people saying, gosh, this is almost too hard to watch because it was too realistic. It had the right balance of realism and the difficulties that trans and gender diverse people face, but it also was done respectfully and optimistically and showed Carlotta as, I think, the heroine that she is and is really, really important that we tell those stories. And I would have put it at the time as one of the best pieces of, I'll call it, arts or fictional media I've seen at all, and certainly probably the best of its time from an Australian perspective. And she did provide a lot of inspiration and visibility for a lot of people. And I mean, there's another amazing talent, as I say, with her skill and wit. And I don't know how realistic the biopic was based on her life, but I've got to admit my favourite scene, dare I say, as an advocate from that, was the part where she and another colleague are in court because they dressing as women was considered something like offensive behaviour. And she stands up and says to the judge or magistrate or whoever it is, well, you're up there in your wig and gown. How are you different to us? Case dismissed. Gone, yeah, Carlotta, you rock. So many awesome trans women. And, of course, there's many, many others out there. I've focused on some well-known ones. Huge credit, of course, to people like Laverne Cox, who, you know, as a in Laverne's groundbreaking role in Orange and the New Black, Janet Mock, and people from all over the world. But I think it's really important. I'll sort of end where I started in a way. Every trans woman, every trans and gender diverse person is awesome if they're just being themselves. And that is so important to provide that visibility and the contribution that trans women make to gender, despite what some people would say. Trans women are saying gender is not this very binary thing. It's not just assigned male at birth, blokey blokes, and assigned female at birth, feminine females. Of course, there are 7 billion genders, and trans and gender diverse people who use their uniqueness and skill and, you know, have just been themselves are providing a way to a world that I think is going to celebrate gender diversity and have a decrease in negativity based on gender and, most importantly, oppression across genders. I think that's something to remember. It is, you know, there are a lot of males who are limited by gender stereotypes, to be fair, But the thing that I think gets forgotten when we start talking about that is most of the negativity, of course, is against women, and I suppose you could say proportionately in this day and age against people of non-binary genders, and it is inflicted by an element of males. And we still need to work on that together. We need to find ways to do it together that are genuine and sincere and win-win. And let's keep working towards that. Well, thank you for listening to this International Women's Day special. So glad to be part of International Women's Day on 3CR. We all had some nice quiet music for the last couple of tracks. I'm going to take it out with the Fab Trans people of Mechanical Black. So you might want to maybe turn your volume down a bit, particularly if you're driving, for Mechanical Black and their loudness from 2009, I think it is. As so many trans people are, reborn. Let's hope we have a rebirth or an ongoing birth of gender equity around the world. Thanks for tuning in to the International Women's Day special and Out of the Pan. I'm Sally Goldner. Catch you on Sundays.
Produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.